And snuffling my way through the news recently, I happened upon this little nugget from the Reuters News Service, and I quote, Dr. Holbreich, an allergist in Indianapolis, has been treating Amish communities in Indiana for 2 decades, but one day he noticed that very few Amish actually had allergies, end quote. This little anomaly leads us to ask, why do so few Amish have so few allergies?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuning into the 775th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Puerto Montt who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Easton Allen on the boards. Hello, Easton.
Hello, Michael.
Folks, it's a fact. By golly, a lot more of us are sneezing and wheezing and rubbing our itchy eyes with each passing season. A lot more of us. In fact, the National Institute of Health says that about 54% of us are now allergic to something, which is an increase of over 500% in the last 3 decades. But wait, there is one group of people who seem to be almost immune to allergies. Listen once again to this quote from the Reuters News Service. Dr. Holbreich, an allergist in Indianapolis, has been treating Amish communities in Indiana for 2 decades, but he noticed that very few Amish actually had allergies. End quote. Today we pause to consider this Amish allergy anomaly and ask, why do so few Amish have so few allergies? Here to help us consider this question, we have from Indianapolis, Dr. Mark Holbreich, who is an allergist and immunologist. Dr. Holbreich, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me.
So you're an allergist and an immunologist. What's the difference? Or is
well,
there?
We treat primarily individuals with allergies. There are some very rare people whose immune system is deficient and get frequent infections. But the majority of what allergists do is take care of asthma and allergies, the usual sorts of things that you mentioned.
Okay, then there is a difference between being an allergist and being an immune.
Well, we do both. We do both, but 90% of what we do is allergy.
Okay, fair enough. So your practice in Indianapolis, and you've been practicing treating the Amish, but the Amish don't have allergies, so is that kind of like treating Eskimos for sunstroke or something?
Well, you know, not really. I think, you know, my practice is in Indianapolis, and the Amish live about 3 hours north of us, about 150 miles away. And initially, when we moved here almost 25 years ago, my wife, who's a physician and who's interested in a disease called hemophilia, began to take care of that in the Amish population. So I thought, well, they don't have insurance. That's their sort of philosophy. They don't accept any sort of insurance. So I thought I'd do allergy and asthma clinics for them. And so we'd put an ad in the newspaper and say, anybody with allergies, come to a free clinic. And many people would show up. Now you might ask, why would they show up if they don't have it? But just like many people, they think they may have an allergy. There are lots of we call alternative practitioners among the Amish, people who sort of sell vitamins and give advice, often with not medical background, something called reflexology, homeopathy. These alternative practitioners would often tell families that because their child had a rash or diarrhea that they were allergic to something, and these parents came to confirm it.
And is it possible to how do you confirm something like that?
Well, there's a test called an allergy skin test, which is a very accurate way of determining whether someone has allergies. So if, you know, you would come to me and say, when I visit my mother-in-law who has a cat, I always sneeze and wheeze, and we can put a test for cat dander on your skin and make a little prick in it, and then you get a little hive, and that tells us that you have an allergy. So we use a test called the allergy skin test, and that tells us if you have allergies.
So you would treat these Amish, and lo and behold, they weren't allergic.
Well, they would come to us with their concerns, and they'd say, I went to the doctor, and my child has been having some diarrhea, so they think it's a milk allergy, and they've been keeping the child away from milk, or they might say that my child has a runny nose in the winter time, and they think it's something he's allergic to in our home. And they would be told these and often given them either some vitamins or some allergy medication. So they would come for sort of confirmation. And when we did the allergy skin test, much to our surprise, many of these children didn't have allergies. There were some who did, but the vast majority who came thinking they had allergies didn't have allergies.
What did your wife say about this observation that you were making? Just out of curiosity, her being a physician as well and treating a specific thing for leiomyomas.
Well, I mean, I think for me was this started 20 years ago, almost 25 years ago, and I just thought it was a curious observation, and we didn't talk about it too much because she was treating another population, but I'd mention it to her. But, you know, I thought, well, you know, we just didn't see a lot. And then this is in the late 1980s I was doing this, and then in early 2000, and, you know, many years after it started in 2002, an article appeared in a British medical journal called The Lancet, which reported a very low, what we call prevalence of allergies in children who live on traditional Swiss farms. And a traditional Swiss farm is the farmhouse and the barn are connected. So the family walks in and out between the barn and the house. And
so there's a real intimacy there.
Intimacy, absolutely. The mothers are in the barns cleaning the barn, and the children are walking back and forth. And a physician in Germany named Erika von Mudius made this observation, interestingly enough, because a family practice doctor in Switzerland had said to her, I think these Swiss children don't have much in the way of allergies and asthma. So Dr. von Mudius and I, met, and she is a world-renowned researcher, and I shared my observations with the Amish, and she became interested in this population.
And when you say allergies and asthma, what is the relationship between those two allergies and asthma?
Well, the majority, if we talk about children, many children wheeze. So many children who are 18 months or 2 years of age will wheeze when they get a cold. But some of those children go on, and when they're 6 and 8 and 10 and 12, they still have wheezing, difficulty breathing. And we know that once you reach school age and you haven't outgrown this difficulty breathing, it's probably because you have allergies. And allergies, in fact, cause asthma for the most part in children.
Okay,
and many young adults. So people who are allergic to cats, I mean, their eyes may run and their nose may itch, but their chest may also get tight, and this chest tightness are the symptoms of asthma.
Okay. Then going back to the Swiss farm children and the observations, they carried a study then, didn't they?
With respect
to the Swiss children.
They've done very, very large studies in Europe. Ours is the first study really looking at a farm population in America. But there are similarities between the Swiss farm children and the Amish children. Obviously, the Amish did emigrate to the United States about 200 years ago to seek religious freedom. And some of your listeners, we're talking about Amish. They may not know what it is to be Amish. I mean, that's not everyone knows that.
That's absolutely true. But let's start with the genetics, because there is a connection there too, isn't there? Is there not?
Right. Right, there is, and that's come up. But we had a control group. The control group were Swiss children who don't live on farms. They're the same genetic background, but they live a suburban life just like children in any suburban population in America. And their level of allergies, you mentioned about 50%, that's what we call sensitization. It's identical to the American school children. So it's not genetic. It's not a genetic population that doesn't get allergies, because the Swiss children who don't live on farms have just as much allergies as anybody else.
But it is the Swiss children who live on farms that don't
have... children who live on traditional farms,
mm-hmm.
These small family farms.
So let's talk a little bit about the traditional Swiss farms for people who, you know, who don't have much connection with agriculture. They might think everybody lives on a traditional farm, but such is not the case anymore. When we talk about a traditional Swiss farm, what exactly do we mean?
Well, the barn and the house are built as one unit. So there's a door that goes from the kitchen into the barn. And they may milk cows, but they may only milk 10 or 12 cows. And so the father and the mother and the children, when it's time for chores, they walk from their kitchen into the barn. And they milk the cows and they feed the cows. So it's a small family farm. It's not like you would think of in a large industrial dairy farm where, you know, 500 or 1,000 cows move through production lines and are all milked automatically. These are...
So then we're talking about a very real sense of intimacy here between people and the animals and their farm, which we will pick up when we come back, because that's one of the things we think may have a bearing on why so few Amish farm children have so few allergies. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour. Today we're talking with Dr. Mark Hallbreich, an allergist and immunologist from Indianapolis, about allergies, and you right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, chances are better than 50-50 that you are allergic or sensitive to something out there in the environment that causes you to wheeze and sneeze and your eyes to water. And chances are, of course, about 100% that you know somebody really well that does have these allergies. So that's what we're trying to come to grips with today. Dr. Mark Hallbreich of Indianapolis is the lead author of a study who looked at a population of Amish school farm children and compared them with Swiss farm children and looked at their rates of allergy and found them to be, well, what were they, Dr. Mark?
Well, yeah, we had three groups, Michael. One was the, as I mentioned, the Swiss children who don't live on farms. They don't have any contact with animals. They're like children any place. Then there are the Swiss farm children who live on these traditional farms and the Amish children. So the findings were that when you talk about allergies, we're talking about what we call sensitization, which is finding a positive skin test. Now, not everybody with a positive skin test will have symptoms, but in population studies, we look at how many people have a positive skin test. So the children who live non-farm Swiss children have about 50% of them will have a positive skin test. And then the Swiss farm children, only about 24%, so half, had a positive skin test, but in the Amish, it was 7%. So even
7%?
Much less, 7%. So even significantly less than the Swiss farm children.
How many farm or Amish farm children did you check then?
We looked at 140 farm children, and we think it's a good representation. Now, I have to tell you that the European studies, they may look at 5,000 or 7,000 children and compare them, but we feel that what we know about this population of Amish and what we know about their exposures, we think that this is real.
So we're talking about a huge difference.
Yes, a huge difference.
Now, what did medical science, how did they react to your study?
Well, I think one of the things we might want to mention just one moment is what is an Amish lifestyle like?
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
So, you know, when the Amish came from Switzerland about 200 years ago, seeking religious freedom from persecution in Switzerland. And they came and they tried to preserve their traditional lifestyle. So they consider themselves sort of separate from what they call the English, which are us. So they don't want a really connection to our world. They want to stay in their own world. So they have no electricity in their homes. So they have no radio, no TV. They use gas lights. They cook with propane gas. They have no cars. So to go to the store, they have a horse and buggy. On the farm, they use horses, large, these Belgian horses, mm-hmm. these huge horses, to plow their fields. They have large families, 8 or 10 children, because they need people to work on the farm. And they live a very simple life, living close to the animals, close to the land. And the children have very early exposures, and that's the key. That's what we think the key is to protection.
So the Amish are really like we were 70 years ago.
Right. And if you look at the increase in allergies, and when we had talked previously, we talked a little bit about other diseases. We may have a chance to talk about other diseases. But you look at asthma and allergies, the rise has been dramatic over the last 50 years. And we see it as we become more westernized. You know, our lives become different from 150 years ago. But they look like a farm 150 years ago.
Well, the fun thing about the Amish, to my way of thinking, is they're like a control group for us. You know,
right.
we wander off and do all of these other things,
right.
And the Amish don't. So in looking at them, they're like kind of like a control, the original control group you're talking about in your
right.
experiment.
And right.
and thus, they're a way of looking at it. So we start looking at the Amish, and we see these people who are living quite primitively when it gets down to it. And yet they're not suffering many of the modern times diseases we are as well. So let's go back and start with allergies again. I'd like to clear up something. Allergens are relatively harmless substances, right? I mean,
yes.
I just talked with the engineer, and he says he's allergic to Tide soap.
Well, now that's a different. We're talking about a different allergy.
Okay.
There are many different types of allergies. You can be allergic to medications, or you can be allergic to poison ivy. That's an allergy. Those are called contact allergies. We're talking about people allergic to what I would say things that are alive. Tide soap is not alive.
Oh.
We're talking about cats, dogs, pollen. Right now in California, that's where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Indiana, we're in the middle of the grass pollen season, so people are outside and sneezing and rubbing their eyes because grass pollen is landing on their eyes and their nose. They're having an allergic reaction to it. So we're talking about an allergy that's called IgE-mediated. In other words, it's an allergy that your body develops an immune response to, and that's how we can measure it on a skin test. So we're actually measuring an immunological marker of allergic disease. So we're limiting, our study is limited to environmental allergies to things, like I said, that are alive. Basically, trees, grasses, weeds, animals, mold spores.
Mm-hmm. Now, are allergies a lack of resistance?
Well, you know, individuals who become allergic have a genetic predisposition. So when we see a child with allergies, it's often common that one or the other parent may have grown up with animal allergies or hay fever. So it's inherited, and you become allergic to things that you're exposed to in your normal life experiences. So, I mean, our bodies become allergic to things that are very common in the environment, like trees and like grasses and like cats and dogs. And
mm-hmm.
And it's just the mystery has been why in the past 50 or 75 years has this grown, you know, so dramatically.
Why do so many of us now have so many allergies?
Right.
Is the mystery
right.
then.
Right. And now our study had nothing to do with peanut allergy. But when I first went to practice 25, 30 years ago, I would see one or two peanut allergic children a year. Now I see one or two peanut allergic children a week. So peanut allergy has just increased dramatically. Why that is, that's a completely different topic. But peanut has become a major health issue for allergies. So allergies are on the rise, and but as you said, the Amish seem to be a group that we don't see the allergies in.
Well, so turning back to them, we see this population of people who live very simply, very primitively, mm-hmm. And very intimately with the
right.
with their environment.
So, yeah, I wouldn't use the word primitive. I mean, they are quite sophisticated. They're sophisticated farmers. They understand farming. They understand feeding animals. They understand agriculture. Even though they only go to eighth grade, they're extremely competent farmers. So
I stand corrected, and I have spoken at farm conferences with large populations of Amish in attendance, and they are wickedly smart with respect to their technology. And you're absolutely correct there. I guess when I was using primitive, I was thinking in terms of modern technology, you know.
Right. Okay. They don't use modern technology.
No, but they don't seem to need it. And that takes us back to the intimacy with which they live.
Right.
Whereas our modern technologies seem to separate us from the farmyard.
Right.
Theirs does not.
Right, and I think there's some things that we've begun to understand, and I think these things are important because some people have picked pieces from the research which may not be completely accurate. So, and this mostly comes from my collaborator, Dr. Van Mudius, from her large German studies, where they look at many, many factors. I mean, do the parents smoke? Are there animals in the home? Do they use wood stoves or gas stoves or how do they heat their homes? Many, many, many questions. And through all of this questioning and statistical analysis, there are a few things that stand out as what we call signals. Signals that lead to protection against allergies.
And we'll pick those up when we come back from this break. We're going to talk about the signals that we have found. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program, and today we're talking about allergies and why, we wonder, do so few Amish people have so few allergies. This is one of the Amish anomalies. There are others, autism being one. We'll pick that up as well when we get back. And you're invited to participate today. If you have any questions or comments about allergies, now is the time to ask, because we have the man here, Dr. Mark Holbach from Indianapolis. 478-314-79-1080, 479-1080. We will be right back. Hey, welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're talking about our allergies. And yes, we all seem to be becoming more and more sensitive to the environment around us. In the past three decades, I think, the incidence of allergies among the population has increased 500%. And now a full 54% of us are sensitive to something in the environment that makes us sneeze and wheeze and our eyes water and we choke. And what is it that's making us so sensitive? We're trying to find out by looking at the population of Amish farm children and Swiss farm children. And because there have been wonderful studies made on these populations, and these populations do not have the incidence of allergies that we have. The Swiss have about a half of what we have, the Swiss farm children, and the Amish farm children only 7%. Why the heck is this so? That's the question we have on the table today with Dr. Mark Holbach. You're invited to participate today, 831-479-1080. Dr. Holbach, we were talking about the signals we have been getting from the various studies that you have been working on. What are those signals?
Well, Michael, I think there are a couple of things that seem to be important. One is when the women are pregnant on these farms, these Amish farms, they work in the barn. They help with milking. They're drinking the raw milk while they're pregnant. And they have these exposures every day to the animals and to what the animals eat and their bedding. And then when the children are born, they're drinking breast milk, but the mother is still drinking raw milk. And the children are weaned to raw milk. And since these are often young families when they start a farm, they don't have someone to stay in the house and watch the baby. So as soon as the babies are old enough, a few months of age, they are in the barn in a bassinet while their parents are milking. So these exposures early on in life to large animals, particularly cows, the food that they eat, probably even the manure in the barn, and the raw milk. Those are the signals. So it's not that they, you know, have wood stoves or they don't have electricity or that they don't have TVs. Those things don't seem to matter. It doesn't, or how many children in the family. It seems to matter that they have these early life exposures, and even before they're born.
And you know, it calls to mind my upbringing on my grandparents' farm, where, you know, we get up early in the morning, go out to the barn, milk the cows. the barn is full of fecal matter, you know, you put the milk in the buckets and carry it across the barnyard, which is also full of fecal matter, and dump it into the separator. And it seemed like, you know, one lived with such intimacy with this stuff that it was just there all the time. It was ubiquitous.
Right.
And now it's not anymore, is it?
No, it's not. It's not.
And so the two signals that you really seem to hold up is this intimacy, this exposure, this continual mm-hmm. exposure at a very early age, and raw milk.
Yes.
Well, tell us about the raw milk, because raw milk seems to be becoming public enemy number one these days. So,
right. Well, I think we're seeing a couple of things. One is that when the studies have been done looking at what the milk does, it seems to be when you homogenize milk, you break up the fat and protein. So those of you remember that the cream would rise to the top.
Sure.
Well, you don't see that in the supermarket. The milk is either 4% or 2% or skim milk. And the way they get that mixed together is they homogenize the milk and break up a lot of the proteins. And one of the proteins that gets broken up is whey. And we think that in the farm milk, that the whey, unbroken up whey, may be one of the things that turns off the immune response. So it seems to turn them away from developing allergies. So it's not the bacteria that are the factor. It's the whey protein. Now, the thing that I think is important for your listeners to understand is that these children are having exposure to the bacteria in the milk before they're even born, because their mothers are drinking it. So they are, in fact, sort of immune to the bacteria. And the reason it's public enemy number one is because people die from drinking raw milk. So drinking milk as a child, not having had these early exposures, is definitely a serious risk of serious infection. Mm-hmm. So you just can't take the milk off the farm and feed it to people with the idea they're going to get better, because the chances are they're much more likely to get sick than to get well. And I think that's one of the things about my study, is that some people are saying raw milk prevents allergies, and that's not the answer, or raw milk cures allergies. Raw milk can be laden with bacteria. And these Amish children, since they have exposures very early in life, are protected. It's kind of like the person who lives in California who goes on vacations in India, and they get sick.
Yep.
And the Indians aren't getting sick, but they're getting sick because their immune system isn't prepared to, you know, see the bacteria or the parasites that come in their meals. The same thing for raw milk. If you don't grow up with it intimately, like you say, you can't just pick it up as an adult and expect that it has curative properties.
Now, whey is a very interesting thing. Whey is one of nature's great sources of protein, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you think that is really the key then in the milk?
Well, we think, you know, these studies, the whey study just came out in the last 6 months. So, you know, we're learning about this disease every year, and mm-hmm. and we're beginning a second phase study of these Amish children to look very, very much more in detail into other signals that we can find. So it does appear that it's the whey and not the bacteria. Although there's no question that the bacterial exposures from the grains, and like you say, being in the farm and stepping in the manure and being around there's lots of bacteria and things. And so we talk about what's called the microbiome, what people are exposed to in terms of their exposure. So it's sort of the whole package. The mother's in the barn, the baby's in the barn, the mother's breastfeeding, the baby's around the cows, they're drinking raw milk, they're around manure, they're around bedding, and it's the whole picture that seems to be the thing. So we can't say, well, is it the straw, or is it the cow, or is it the milk? It seems to be everything.
And that's really hard to put your finger on.
Right, but we hope that we can distill it out. I mean, our future hope is that we can identify the thing that is most important. And if it is a whey protein, maybe modifying the way milk is produced can leave the protective factors of whey in the milk and take out the potentially risky factors, which are the bacteria.
The bacteria.
There's a lot of work to do, but, you know, our goal is, you know, our goal is, here's a population who doesn't get allergies. What's the lesson for the parent listening in who has a child with allergies and asthma and allergic to peanuts? What's the future for their children? Well, our hope would be that we can identify those few products and offer them as a supplement or something that we might say, this could prevent allergies. Now, this is not tomorrow, next week, or next month. We're just beginning to open up this box of information, and it'll take us years to get there, but we think that we're on the right track.
On the right track. Well, there's a couple other tracks that people have raised that I'd like to raise with you. One of them we touched on was genetics, but the other one was the exposure to vaccinations, which the Amish farm children do not get.
No, the Amish farm children get vaccinations in the same frequency as...
Oh, they do?
Yes.
Okay, then...
They vaccinate.
Then we'll pick up the autism anomaly when we get back with Dr. Mark Holbrecht and you, 831-479-1080. Hey, we're back. We're talking about some of the signals that we get from studies on allergies, why we're getting so many of them. People, when I brought the subject up in my weekly release, they raised the question, well, of course, the reason we get new allergies is because, or the reason Amish children do not get allergies is because they are not vaccinated. And Dr. Mark Holbrecht says?
Yes, they are vaccinated.
They are vaccinated?
They go to the doctor for their checkups just like your children and my children do. They get their immunizations. They go to the doctors when they're sick, and... No, they are immunized.
Okay. To the same extent we are?
Yes. And okay. I would say to the same extent that there's some, you know, poor underserved people in this country who miss out on immunizations. I think there are some among the Amish. But in generally, their level of immunizations is similar to our
okay, fair
English
enough.
Population.
What about processed foods?
They do have a lot of processed foods that you would not think processed. They have sugar. A lot of carbohydrates and sugar in their diet, so processed sugar. They don't eat, you know, snack foods like we would, but their diet is very heavily in carbohydrates and a fair amount of fat. But we also feel that, you know, we talked about these exposures they have early in childhood. There may be some effect on even their bacteria in their intestines and how they handle these foods, because obesity is not an issue among the Amish, even though they have a fairly high carbohydrate diet. So there may be, this is something we have not looked at all, there have been some studies looking at how your intestinal bacteria handles foods.
Oh.
So,
another Amish anomaly then, would be that they do not have the incidence of obesity.
Right, but, you know, they also work 12 hours a day.
That'll take care of a lot of obesity, won't it?
You know what farm-like is life?
Yeah.
Carry buckets of milk around.
Uh-huh.
It's hard work.
Let's go to the phones and see what our listeners have to say. We'll start off with Eric. Eric, welcome to the Food Chain Radio program. You're talking with Dr. Mark Holbrecht.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be part of your program.
Fire away.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dr. Holbrecht, is that the name?
Yeah.
I had a question. I just started listening to the program, and you were talking about the different incidence of allergies in the Amish farm children compared to the normal population. And what sort of a study was that? I mean, how did they test the Amish children? Were they done skin allergy
testing? Yes, we talked about that. We did skin testing.
Skin testing. And what were the results, and when was the testing done?
We did the testing in the spring of 2011 and published it just recently. So it was, it's been within the last year.
Hot off the press, Eric.
Well, thank you. And which journal could I look at to see the publication?
It's in the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology. I'm sure Michael could put the link up on his website. I can send it to him. If you just Google my name in Amish, you can find references to the study.
Thank you very much. I have had allergies in the past, but as I've gotten older, they tend to go away. Is that something that you also see in different populations?
That's fairly common, and people may have, say, spring allergies growing up as a preteen and teen, and by their college years and young adult years, they seem to get better. So for some people, and actually for a percentage of the population, those seasonal allergies do get better with time. Food allergies like nuts and shellfish and cat allergies seem to be a little bit more apt to hang around.
And those are the allergies that the Amish people don't have? They don't have those cat allergies?
They don't have any. I mean, no, they don't have
any allergies. Any allergies. Well, that's
amazing.
Well,
there's some. I mean, there's a small group that do have allergies, but when you look at them as a population, there is much less than in our population.
Eric, once again, a thumbnail on allergies. Over the past, three decades, the incidence of allergies in the general population has increased by 500%. Now, approximately 54% of us have sensitivities or allergies to things. In the population of Swiss farm children, what did you say, doctor?
24%.
24%.
7 in the.
All right. Well, thank you. I'll keep listening on the radio. Bye-bye.
Good. All right. Fair enough.
Thank you for your question.
And before we go to the next caller, doctor, what about the Amish autism anomaly, whereas in the general population, 1 in 166 have autism, and in
now,
Amish,
now it's 1 in 88.
1 in 88.
28 births currently. It's something that I've become interested in because we know that if you look at the rise of asthma and you sort of plot that out on a curve, and you plot out the rise in the prevalence of autism, they track. And in our informal questions of the Amish, they are unaware of autism in their community. And actually, my wife is planning a large population study looking at all sorts of diseases in the Amish, and we hope to have get some data on autism. There are some people believe that autism is due to some brain inflammation that may start even prenatally. So I think that's a fascinating topic, and if we can find that the Amish are also protected from autism, I mean, I think that would be tremendous. But our data on allergies and asthma is validated and true, and we know that it's real. Autism is something we hope to look at in the future, but no information yet.
But we don't really know. And the incidence of autism is said among the Amish population is said to be 1 in 15,000, which is almost like...
Well, I don't think there have been really good population studies, and that's one of the things we hope to do in the next few years is survey the entire Amish population of 25 or 30,000 individuals and learn about other diseases, too.
Okay, we're going to take one last break, and when we come back, we're going to go quickly to the phones and get as many as we can. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for the hour, with Dr. Mark Holbreich, and you right back. Please do stay tuned. Well, so much to talk about, so little time to talk about it in. Dr. Mark Holbreich, we're looking at the future. What do you think? We're going to be able to get a hold of these allergies and figure out what we can do?
Well, I would hope so. You know, as allergists, we have very little we can offer patients in terms of prevention because they come to us already sick. So we can say, well, if your cat bothers you, you can find a home for your cat, or it's that bad, you can take medications, or you can do something called allergy injections. So our goal in this study, and particularly my German colleagues who have vast experiences, how can we possibly prevent this sort of allergic epidemic that we're seeing? It's far down the road, but I think we're starting to think that it may be possible.
Why is the incidence increasing so dramatically? What are we doing here in modern times?
We don't know. I mean, there are lots of theories about that, and that would be a whole other hour. But I would say westernization. You know, children are getting immunizations and not getting the illnesses they used to. There's improved sanitation, improved drinking water is healthier. People are not having the illnesses. There's maybe more animals in homes where there used to not be animals in homes. There's more childhood obesity, less physical activity. So there are lots of reasons, and that's a whole other area why it's rising. I mean, our interest is there a way to prevent it?
Okay, well, let's go quickly to the phones. Millie, welcome to the food chain.
Thank you. My question is, I'm trying to cut out meat consumption, even though I would buy grass-fed, and I'm using organic whey protein. Does the doctor consider that a good choice?
Doctor? Thank you, Millie.
Well, you know, Amish farms are not organic farms. They use, if a cow has mastitis, they use an antibiotic. And when that cow is better, it goes back into milking. On an organic farm, you have to take that cow out of production. The Amish cows are not grass-fed. They eat a mixture of straw and grain. So we're not talking about organic. I mean, these Amish are not living an organic lifestyle.
They're just living close.
They're using pesticides on their fields if they're bugs, and if a cow has an infection, they give it antibiotics. So these are not organic farms.
Okay, so, good. Let's go quickly to Gary. Gary, fire away.
Yes, my wife and I grew up in a Old Order Mennonite church, and many of the relatives were Amish. I can tell you for a fact that every Amish that we were involved with never got vaccinations. They were diametrically opposed to getting vaccinations. Interestingly enough, the ones that left the Amish church and became part of the Mennonite church, which did insist that people go see their doctors and such, the ones that started taking vaccinations, their children developed allergies. Now they're developing autism. The ones in the church that moved to the Old Order Mennonite church that did not go to doctors and did not use the vaccinations, even though they were no longer Amish and living near the cities, they did not develop allergies and have not developed autism. So to me, it appears to be vaccinations.
Okay, Gary, thank you for the call. And, you know, I guess, Dr. Holbreich, I guess this is one of the reasons why we do need real studies like yours and that of the German folks studying the Swiss farm children. We do need to have some kind of objective look at what's going on, because what's going on seems to be going out of control.
Well, I think it is. I mean, in terms of immunizations, there may be some sects of Amish who don't, but I think the idea that immunizations cause autism has kind of been shown with some good solid studies that it doesn't. That doesn't mean it's not an epidemic and we shouldn't look.
Okay, we're out of time. Dr. Mark Holbreich, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you all out there for tuning in the food chain. Remember, cheap food isn't. Thank you all.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.